Lawrence Stevens, stationed in Seoul during the Korean War, was quartered with 16 other men of his postal unit in an old, bombed-out Japanese Imperial Army headquarters. Compared with the living conditions in the streets for native Koreans, Stevens decided he was lucky to live in the patched-up barracks. On the night of June 12, 1953, however, Stevens was not quite so convinced of his good fortune. It had been a hot, sultry day in the capital city. As Stevens made his usual mail run from Seoul to Yongdu-po across the Han River, he registered again the incredible squalor surrounding him. The country, now embroiled in the bloody Korean conflict, had scarcely recovered the ravages of past battles. In and around Seoul, he saw the wretched poverty and conspicuous starvation. Lawrence Stevens returned from his regular mail run that evening, played a few hours of cards with his buddies, and gratefully retired to bed. Thin partitions had been put up in the barracks, offering each man the uncommon luxury of a room to himself. Stevens had managed to pick up a good book in the city that day, and he was eager to read it. Any printed material seemed a rarity in that war-ravaged country. Stevens went into his room and plopped down on his narrow canvas cot. He placed his precious book on top of a small box containing his few possessions, stretched back on the cot, and lit a cigarette. He reached up over his head and switched on the light at the head of his bed. His eyelids closed wearily, and his consciousness was suffused with thoughts of home in Shelbyville, Indiana. In a few weeks, the soldier would receive his discharge, and it seemed he could already taste his mother's marvelous home-cooked meals. While in this state of reverie, Stevens lost all awareness of his surroundings. Something told him to open his eyes, and he saw an image that shocked him vividly back to the present realities of war. Standing just inside Stevens' door was a United States Marine, clothed in full battle dress. An M1 rifle was slung over his shoulder. The soldier was solid, real, except for one horrifying thing: where his head should have been. Stevens saw only a bloody neck stump sticking out of a green battle jacket. Blood was oozing from the hideous stump, running down the soldier's arm onto a big blonde head tucked against his side. Bright red splotches fell to the barracks floor. As Stevens gazed in horror at this bloody apparition, it turned toward him. Slowly, the headless Marine approached and sat down on the box containing Stevens' meager possessions. While Stevens watched transfixed, the ghastly entity picked up the head and carefully placed it on the neck stump. With his right hand, the bloody soldier brushed away beads of perspiration from his forehead. He looked at Stevens in a way the young soldier will never forget, then opened his mouth to speak. "Chinese have broken through everywhere. I sure will be glad when these 3 months are up." Stevens repeated the ghostly utterance in the February 1962 Fate magazine. The grim soldier mopped his brow again, and dried blood showed on the back of his hand. Stevens could take no more. With a gurgle of fear, he leapt to his feet and charged out of the room. He was badly shaken and uncertain what to do, where to go. Finally, he knocked on the door of a close friend of his, Leo Brandenburg. Brandenburg opened the door, rubbed the sleep from his eyes. "What the devil is wrong with you, Stevens?" Stevens entered the room, unsure of how much he should say. After all, he did not want his friend to think of him crazy. He could not contain himself, though, and soon the whole story came pelting out of him. He finally finished and glanced hesitantly at his friend. To Stephen's surprise, Brandenburg placed his hand on his shaking arm. A faint smile played across his lips. Am I glad you told me this, Larry? Brandenburg said slowly. It clears up a lot of my own troubles. I know that what you saw was not a hallucination, because I've seen it too. You have just seen the ghost of Sol. Brandenburg suggested that the two of them go back to Stephen's room and have a look around the premises, but the sight of the headless Marine had been too recently etched in Stephen's mind. He declined and went to the guard's room for the night. The government-trained manuals covered many circumstances, but there just were not any rules regarding the sighting of ghosts. Stevens had been completely unprepared for the vision, and he was not ready to encounter a possible second appearance. The next morning, a cup of strong black coffee under his belt, Stevens felt more like returning to his own quarters. With his courage firmly screwed to the ticking place, he opened his door. He especially wanted to check out the floor. He had seen the blood splash to its surface, and he wanted to check if the drops were still there. So solid had the vision been, he expected to see the evidence of his nocturnal visitor on the floor. No marks were there. Stevens inspected the whole floor area meticulously and was surprised to discover but not one single spot remained. 3 weeks later, Stevens' discharge came through and the GI was on his way home. Back in Shelbyville, Indiana, the horrors of war, both real and supernatural, faded mercifully from his mind. Gory details became fuzzy. Other more pleasant memories took their place. In September 1953, the Korean War ended. When news reached Stevens, he had sudden complete recall of his strange nighttime visitor. What had the Marine said? I sure will be glad when these 3 months are up. Stevens had heard him speak those words in June. 3 months had passed. Without realizing it, Stevens had heard the headless Marine predict the end of the Korean War, 3 months in advance of the actual fact.